meeting of the City of Sydney Local Planning Panel. On behalf of the Planning Panel, I'd like to acknowledge the original custodians of the land we're on, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to their elders both past and present. The Local Planning Panel also acknowledges the present Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who reside within this area. The meeting today is to consider development applications listed on the agenda. Panel members have read the agenda papers for this meeting and the submissions that have been received, and have also had a briefing from council staff on the items on the agenda. The panel members tonight are myself. My name is Abigail Goldberg, and I'm the independent chair. We also have Helen Lockhead and Sean Carter as the independent expert members, and community representative Amelia Thorpe. I welcome everybody to this meeting. Please be assured the panel will be making its decisions tonight on the planning merits of each application and following consideration of the views expressed in submissions and by people addressing the panel tonight. Determinations and any relevant decision of the panel shall be by a majority of votes of members present at the meeting and entitled to vote. If votes are tied, the chair has a casting vote. As an important transparency measure, the reasons for our decision will be recorded in the minutes as part of the decision. Where the panel goes against or amends the officer's recommendation, the panel will state their reasons for that. The running order for the night is that the manager of planning assessments will provide an overview of the development application as it is considered, noting key issues raised in the recommendation of council staff. We will then hear from members of the public who have registered to speak, followed by the applicant and or the applicant's representatives who may like to address issues raised by members of the public. Please note that there is a 3-minute time limit for each speaker and a bell will ring at 3 minutes. Aaron over there has the bell. I ask that each speaker be heard in silence while they're addressing the panel and that courtesy and respect be observed throughout this meeting. Please ensure there is no personal criticism directed at any speaker or at council staff. Any such criticism would be contrary to the panel's code of conduct and will not be accepted by the panel. The panel may ask questions of speakers to clarify our understanding of what is being said. However, the panelists often don't choose to ask questions, so it's not expected. If you have registered to speak, your address to the panel will be recorded. All the public meetings of the panel are recorded, and the recordings are available on the City's website. Please note that other than this, there is to be no recording or filming of this meeting. After hearing from speakers, the panel will consider and make our decision on the application. This may involve adjourning the meeting to confer amongst ourselves before reconvening the meeting to make our decision, or we may make our decision without the need to adjourn. If the panel considers more information is required before making its decision, the panel may defer its decision for consideration at a later date. We are moving then into item one of today's agenda, and item one is disclosures of interest. In accordance with clause 4.9 of the Code of Conduct for Local Planning Panel members, all panel members have signed a declaration of interest in relation to each matter on the agenda. In relation to this meeting, no members have disclosed any pecuniary or non-pecuniary interests in relation to any matter on the agenda. Moving on to item two, which is the confirmation of minutes. The panel notes the minutes of the local planning panel of the 9th of October 2019, which have been endorsed by the chair of that meeting. Okay, we move now on to the development applications that are part of today's agenda, and item three is for development application at 161 Castlereagh Street, Sydney, which is D/2019/88. Mr. Mackay, could I ask you to do your presentation, please, on this one?
Thank you. So this application seeks consent for the extension of use of tenancies 6, 7, 8, and 9. For the Liberty Place Bar. The works or the development includes the construction of awnings throughout the existing open space, construction of a new enclosed bar area for tenancy 10, which is an open tenancy at present, and that's located beneath the tower undercroft area, and bar fit-out works. The proposed patron capacity would be a total of 680 persons. That's 390 for the internal areas and 290 for the external areas. The application is recommended for refusal. The application was notified in February and March of this year. 205 owners and occupiers were notified and 2 submissions were received. The submissions are related to a number of issues. The development exceeds the floor space ratio development standard for the site. It contravenes the existing restrictive covenant relating to rights of public access, the open space. Patrons would result in a breach of the Liquor Act, a loss of the mid-block open space and public amenity issues, and unacceptable noise impacts on surrounding uses. So the submissions came from the adjoining premises immediately adjacent on Castlereagh Street to the south, which is a boutique hotel use. So this is the site, or the larger site, which is the ANZ Tower site. It runs through from Pitt Street to Castlereagh Street, and the proposed development relates to the existing tenancies within the central portion of the site, which fringe the open space. An external tenancy, which is currently has some publicly accessible seating, which is underneath the public artwork under the Undercroft area of the tower. So this is Liberty Place entrance via Castlereagh Street. This is looking towards the art installation, which is located above the Tenancy 10, and that's where the new building to enclose Tenancy 10 is proposed. This is at the top of the steps, looking towards the existing tenancies that are to be refurbished and extended. Tenancy 9 is tucked away in the corner near the tree on the left-hand side of that image. And that's a view of Tenancy 9, which is in that northern corner of the open space. This is the view looking in the opposite direction, effectively standing in front of Tenancy 9, looking backwards to the open plaza. And this is adjacent to the... photograph shows the adjacent development, the Castlereagh Boutique Hotel, and that's the premises from which the submissions came. So this plan shows the existing ground floor plan and the location of the tenancies, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and the open space tenancy, 10. And this is a proposed ground floor plan. So the space currently taken up by 6, 7, and 8 is to be expanded. Tenancy 9 remains in the corner, is to be refurbished, and Tenancy 10, there is to be a new building in that Undercroft area. And this is a proposed roof awning plan, which connects the various tenancies. This plan just shows a section through the proposed pavilion building, which is to be extended. There's Tenancy 6, 7, and 8 in it. And this is an illustration of the proposed works looking from the through site link up the steps towards the various tenancies that comprise this proposal. And there's a closer view from the top of the steps, and you can see the new enclosed building area for Tenancy 10 adjacent to the ANZ Tower sign on that image. A closer view of the proposed Tenancy 10. This is an aerial view of the development, and even closer view from Tenancy 9 facing south, and a view of the entry to Tenancy 10, and views of the extended pavilion building, which incorporate Tenancy 6, 7, and 8. This is a view of the enclosed Tenancy 10 with views towards Legion House and Castlereagh Street. So in terms of compliance with the key development standards, there is a non-compliance with the floor space ratio control that applies to the site. The control would allow a floor space ratio of 12.52:1. The proposed development is 14.86:1. The existing development's already over that floor space ratio, and it's creating some additional floor space with the enclosure of tenancy 10 and the extension of tenancy 6, 7 and 8. Clause 4.6 variation request has been submitted but is not supported. The issues primarily relate to the non-compliance with the floor space ratio control, the impacts of the proposed works and the creation of that new floor space on the public plaza, in terms of the impacts on the public artwork, removal of trees, issues in relation to design excellence and the impact on the amenity of the plaza as an open space. Other issues also relate to the potential impacts, acoustic impacts of the proposed use on adjoining development. So in terms of floor space ratio, an additional 181 square metres of floor space is proposed. That results in a 19% non-compliance with the maximum floor space ratio control in the LEP. Floor space calculations provided based on the old LEP definitions and based on desktop calculations as opposed to a detailed survey of the building. The submitted 4.6 variation request is not considered to be satisfactory and is not supported, and the new floor space is considered to have negative amenity impacts on the public plaza. The proposal also reduces the amount and quality of the usable open space available to the public. It results in a large portion of the plaza being privatised and enclosed, and which is contrary to the base consent for the development, which permitted additional floor space exceeding the LEP maximum based on the public benefits, including the plaza and access to that space by the public. So the proposal is contrary to the restrictive covenant, which applies to the site, which demarcates public and private leasable spaces. So these plans show the approved leasable seating zones on the left-hand side, which are identified in the red colour, and on the left-hand side are the publicly accessible zones, subject to the conditions of consent, and the purple area is a covenant in relation to public access through the site. This plan shows the approved and proposed restriction on land uses. It's inverted from the previous plans, so the on the left-hand side, the unshaded areas show the existing approved outdoor leasable areas, and on the right-hand side, the unshaded areas will show the areas that are contained within what would be the new leases, so the extension to the pavilion building, the new enclosed tenancy 10, and an increase in the outdoor area adjacent to tenancy 10. So in terms of public art, the location of the new enclosed bar, tenancy 10, and awning is under the artwork. It's considered to negatively impact on views and the public enjoyment of that artwork and the public space around it. So this is an illustration. This is the looking in opposite directions, but this is the space as it currently exists, with the artwork under the undercroft, looking in the opposite direction. That ground level space will be enclosed by a new building in tenancy 10. In terms of trees, one tree will be removed. That's a tree in the corner on the left-hand side of the image, and the trees on the right-hand side of the image will be impacted by the new construction works and extension to the pavilion building in tenancy 6, 7 and 8. In terms of acoustic impacts, the submitted acoustic report and plan of management contain a number of inconsistencies and technical errors that are not supported. Some aspects of the reports claim acoustic measures will reduce noise impacts. Council officers consider this might actually be the opposite. The opposite might actually be the case. And the acoustic report also assumes that the Castlereagh Boutique Hotel has completed acoustic upgrade works on the north-facing windows. So those are the windows on the boundary with the open space. So the application is recommended for refusal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mackay. We will move now to presentations by people who have been registered to do so, and we have one objector who we have registered as Gillian Sneed or Sneed? Sneed, Gillian, thank you. So you have 3 minutes, as does everyone. Thank you, Gillian. Oh, Gillian, also, if you can press your button, then your microphone will switch on. Perfect. Thank you.
Chairman, members of the local planning panel and council staff, we thank you for the opportunity to address the panel prior to your consideration of item 3 for D/2019/188 at 161 Castle Ray Street, Sydney, for the Liberty Place Bar. I am the consultant town planner with GLN Planning, and we've been engaged by the New South Wales Masonic Club and Castle Ray Boutique Hotel, the adjoining site to the south, to review the various development and modification applications and for representation in the Land and Environment Court in relation to the Liberty Place Bar proposals as required since early 2018. So it's not my first go at this. Our client is potentially most affected by noise and antisocial behaviour arising from the proposed Liberty Place Bar. We raise other technical matters as town planning experts, and we note that the assessment report largely concurs with those matters. We support the recommendation of the staff for refusal of the application. The proposal has a protracted history and has now been the subject of 4 applications to council and 2 discontinued appeals to the Land and Environment Court. The potential acoustic impacts have not been adequately addressed in the submitted reports by the applicant, and the adverse acoustic impacts are exacerbated by the patron numbers proposed. The site's located within the Sydney CBD entertainment precinct map, and the transfer of a hotel licence between premises located in the same freeze precinct requires consideration of Clause 47F3 of the Liquor Act. We're of the opinion that the manner in which the approved patron numbers from the former Windsor Hotel have been calculated is incorrect. The approved patron numbers should be based on the various consents and the licences issued, which from my review of the council files indicates 385 patrons as compared to the applicant's 680. The applicant submitted a complying development certificate and a population study to justify their overall patron numbers on BCA compliance. That complying certificate, development certificate, was lodged at the same time as the hotel was being, the first application was being lodged for this site, and as the former site was being resumed for metro purposes. So it would appear that it's been contrived to achieve an outcome of to achieve a significant income increase in patron numbers. We agree with the assessment report that the proposal likely exceeds the maximum floor space ratio. And in addition, the site has a restriction imposed on the title as required by the council in following the consolidation of the site for the base DA, and the covenant provides for a maximum FSR of 14.51 as to 1. The provisions of clause 1.9A of the LEP to render restrictive covenants ineffective don't apply because this covenant benefits council. The restriction on the title acts as a jurisdictional bar, in our opinion, to granting consent where the overall FSR of the covenant is breached.
Can you just wrap up, Gillian, please? Wrap up.
Yeah, sorry. So it's three versions of the acoustic report have been submitted, and it relies on the fact that double glazing works have been undertaken, that consent on my client's property. That consent has only been obtained. It hasn't been funded, and there's no plan at this point to undertake that work. We maintain that, as we have consistently, that the proposal will have the effect of privatising the plaza, which was a material public benefit consideration in the 2007 consent, and the applicant asserts incorrectly that as the tenancies surrounding the plaza have been inconsistent success, that warrants a more active use of the plaza. Thank you, and
thank you.
I'm joined here today by the General Manager of Castle Ray Boutique Hotel, Ethan.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Gillian. Moving on to the representatives of the applicant, David Rippingill. Thank you, David. You have 3 minutes, and please switch your microphone on when you're ready. Thank you.
I just wanted to check, did Were you guys given a copy of a letter that I'd sent to the Secretariat yesterday?
Yes, we have received it and read it. Thank you.
I'm just going to talk to that letter.
That's okay.
So, obviously, thank you for your time. We're here to request a deferral of this decision. We think we can resolve Council's concerns, and that if the panel members haven't visited the site yet to understand the context and why this application needs to be made, we believe you should do so, particularly in the evening when this will be of most use to activating the space. To quickly go over some of the issues, the breach of the Liquor Act, I know that was previously raised. The liquor licence has already been transferred to this site, so that's not a relevant matter. And one thing that wasn't also mentioned is the history for this site. A development consent, D2017-725, has already been granted for a pub at this site, including 390 internal patrons and 290 external patrons, which is what is sought here. No change is sought to the number of external patrons. As for additional acoustic impacts, we're pretty surprised that that's an ongoing issue that we're still trying to resolve with Council. As it was raised, there's been three acoustic reports submitted. That's because Council's changed the acoustic criteria they wanted us to meet three times. So I'll let we talk to those issues raised there. In terms of the privatisation of public space and the FSR issues, it was noted on there there's a 19% compliance that results from a historical approval under the covenant. 65,000 square metres has been approved here. We're adding 181. That's less than 0.5%. And we think it's reasonable, and that we've calculated it to be within that maximum square metreage under the covenant. And in terms of addressing Council's concerns about the privatisation of public space, you'll see on page 3 of the letter that I've submitted, if you've got it in front of you, that we've come up with a revised scheme for the daytime trade in terms of the leasable seating areas, which was the red map that was previously shown that had a fairly expansive outdoor seating area. Council's raised that this area is fairly popular during the day, and in response to their concerns, we're happy to draw that area back in order to address the privatisation of the public space. In terms of the effect of the additional GFA that's being proposed, there is another figure shown on page 4 of my letter. Shows the location of the additional GFA. See that most of it is on areas or adjacent to areas that are already built upon and don't impact on the public accessibility of the area. Tenancy 10 is located over one of the leasable seating areas. It's not publicly accessible. So there's very minor impacts as a result of the additional GFA on the publicly accessible plaza. It mostly arose out of the leasable seating area, which we've acknowledge that during the day we would be happy to pare that back. At night time, when it's not used, we suggest the applicant should be able to use it to the extent proposed. Lastly, with respect to the artwork, since I've still got time to talk about it, but FJMT can also speak to that as well. There's a couple of figures showing a higher quality photo montage on page 5. Our view that the changes aren't negative, the artwork will still be able to be viewed from everywhere within.
Can you wrap up, please?
Yeah, within the plaza and that the addition's a high quality one.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Tilly, Simon Tillier. Tilly? Okay. If you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself, please.
I will. Thank you. Good evening. I'm Stephen Nicol. I represent the joint asset owners, GPT and ISPT, here this evening. And I'd just like to let you know that my association with this site has been for 10 years. I was with GrowCon as the development manager on the original ANZ Tower and this design of the plaza, and I'm now with a GPT as the asset owner. So I could go into lengths, actually, by the background, but...
You've only got 3 minutes.
I know, I have three
Thank
minutes,
you.
And... I pretty much just want to arrive at this plaza has just never worked. It has not met the original design intent of actually meeting and trying to enhance and encourage the public into this space. We've had vacant tenancies for the last 4 years. We have been in consultation with experts in both the retail fields, retail design and retail leasing, in trying to work on plans to activate this area. And all have fell short, and we've landed with what we feel, after quite a big search, the right operator to really activate this plaza going forward. We also have been in consultation with ANZ and Herbert Smith Freehills, who are the major occupants of the tower, and all of them encourage us to push forward with trying to get this approved. It has been, as I say, vacant for 4 years. They feel that they're losing a lot of amenity, and the amenity that was promised to them, I guess, under the original design schemes just hasn't met their expectations or their employees' expectations, and that's unfortunate. In terms of the floor space, you know, the asset owners have maintained floor space for something like this, so we're not exceeding 14.5 to 1, despite what was up on that board before, and we encourage anyone who wants to sit down and go through the floor space calculations that we have held some in reserve for this very instance. And also with the public art being involved in the consultation with that public art as well, it's obviously to be viewed from all angles of the plaza, which we are not restricting and we're not touching. We can still maintain it as part of this scheme as well. So I guess the other thing is we've engaged FJMT, who you all know is the original base building design architects, to assist us through this process. So we're trying to be sympathetic to the original design of the building, and we haven't extended. We've also engaged FJMT in the past to increase the amount of public seating compared to what was originally approved under the development. We've been through two phases of this by engaging the upper plaza with additional public seating and also engaging and activating the stairs which lead from the lower plaza to the upper plaza by enhancing and installing at our cost more public seating. So,
can you wrap up, please?
I will indeed. So I guess from the asset owners, we really like to activate this, and you know, I think there can be a great balance of public and private use in this plaza.
Thank you, Mr. Nicol. Who is speaking next? Can you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, I'm Sean McPeak from FJMT.
Thank you, Sean. Okay, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. FJMT have a very long involvement in the project, going back to the original Design Excellence competition in 2002. And we've been working with Steve Nicol, who just spoke prior to me, probably since 2008, 2009. And we acknowledge that a key component of the overall project's vision was its retail offering centred around the new laneway and plaza. And we're very aware of the importance of the publicly accessible space to the success of this project and also its significance to City of Sydney. However, the success of these spaces is obviously dependent upon the energy and activation associated with them across a range of hours and a range of people, both public and workers in the commercial tower. And we've been working with the building owners, and particularly those association with Steve, since the completion of the original project, to increase the public seating and the general amenity of the space through a range of additional public seats that were added under the artwork. And then at the owner's invitation, we've been working collaboratively over the last couple of years with the proposed tenant and their team to meet both their retail requirements while still preserving the original design intent of the space. And a key recommendation that came out from the tenants' design team and their retail experts was that a line of sight or approach from the laneway was very important for the success of the overall proposal. And hence, new tenancy 10, which is located under the artwork for its very visibility that is otherwise not available. The same reason as the artwork was positioned there. And the procurement of the Kerthwyn Evans artwork was fundamental to the success of that space, and we're very aware of the importance to preserve it. As such, any additions within the plaza have sought to be sensitively positioned and located relative to the artwork, and to ensure there's opportunities for ongoing access for maintenance. So we acknowledge the concerns as raised relative to the artwork and the amendments to the publicly accessible space. However, we request that those be considered in the overall context of an active, engaged public space that the owners wish to see as a significantly improved, highly activated space. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. We have two other people noted, Simon Tilley and George Way. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah. Good evening, everyone. My name is George Wei from Acoustic Logic. I'm the author of this acoustic report. A similar report was provided in year 2017. That report was approved and conditioned by council last year. The previous report was for 390 people inside and 290 people outside, and the new proposal, that's exactly the same number. And the noise criteria to that hotel we talked to just now, the internal noise criteria, that's the same as year 2017. In addition, for this new design, I recommended to install plastic curtain on southern facade facing the hotel side. That plastic curtain should be extended after 10 meters from top up to 1.2 meters from the ground. So that's additional barrier. So in my report, that barrier effect, it is from this plastic curtain. It's not rely on the new glazing on that hotel facade. That's the first point. The second point, council concerned that a plastic curtain may result the noise increase. So you can imagine if the plastic curtain is extended, 80% of the open area is closed. So I got testing data from PVC supplier. This kind of PVC plastic curtain can provide noise reduction more than 10 dB. But in my barrier effect, we just use 5 to 7 dB. That's based on my testing from some similar project sites. Council also concerned the area correction from our side to upstairs. Our modeling for upstairs, because we assumed upstairs is sort of like meeting room or office sitting above the restaurant. So we assumed the meeting room typically like 25 square meter, like 4 meter by 6 meter, 6 point something meter, 25 square meter. That's the reason we put in our modeling. So that 25 square meters, that's for the office areas. It shouldn't be like the whole site. So next point the council concerned, that's a single patron noise level used in my report. I used 81 dBA. It's called L10. It's averaged maximum patron noise. We've done many, many similar projects, and a typical patron noise sitting outside is 77 dBA, and we use 81. It's 4 dB higher than that. Bear in mind, that's L10. L10 means average and maximum noise level. We already used average and maximum noise level to carry out our noise modeling. So I reckon that's typical worst scenario.
Thanks, George. Are you done, or you want to wrap up?
Yes, done.
You're done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Tilly, are you still speaking? Thank you. Can you introduce yourself for the recording?
Yeah, sure.
Please? Thank you.
Simon Tilly, I'm the applicant. First of all, I mean, we're all here talking about the technical aspects. I just wanted to throw my 2 cents worth in as an operator. I operate the Oxford Art Factory, which is a live music venue in Oxford Street. I also open the Veranda Bar. We just recently went to London for an international award on our design. I believe that everything that I've operated in the Sydney, including where this license came from, which was on the other side of the Castlereagh Boutique Hotel I operated for 22 years, no complaints whatsoever, not one legal breach in 22 years of my custodian. I just wanted to say that I'm a good operator and operate with the highest protocols. We previously got approved here under the old council unanimously in the view that I was bringing something to Sydney. This space, we just left there at 5 o'clock. I have a video on my phone. Not one person there. This is 6 weeks out from Christmas. Not one person. We've got a graveyard. I'm here trying to raise plenty of money to spend on this place. One of the most special venues in Sydney. We have a fantastic opportunity here. I'm amazed and disappointed that the council did not take the opportunity to come down and meet with us, discuss with us, and stand there and look at the thing. And I think from what David Rimpengirl said earlier, I'd really like this to see this deferred and love to see the council come down the meet, and preferably if the panel members have time to go either at 5 o'clock at night, 6 o'clock at night, or during the day and just see this ghost town. We're happy to meet and just and run through it and just say, we've got an opportunity here to do something special for Sydney, and yet I'm at a loss, quite frankly. But I mean, I'm obviously quite emotive about it because I've spent plenty of money and several years. As I said, the councillor's wish was unanimous last application, and I did it that way through pragmatic reasons due to legal issues, not so much planning issues. And I'm surprised that we're here now with you know, a recommendation for refusal. So just, I would kindly love to defer this and insist we all go down and have a meeting and then make up our mind from there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tilley. Panelists, any questions? Those are all of our speakers. Ms. Lockett.
I'd just like Graham Yarn to actually clarify some of the assertions that the FSR was not in breach and that it was compliant, because as far as our reading of the report, it is non-compliant. So can you clarify that, please?
The staff stand by their calculations in the report, which apparently are different to how the proponent calculated EFA statements made, but staff believe that we have accurately calculated the.
So we have a difference of opinion. There are other panelists, but may I ask as well in the same vein, there's mention that the numbers of 680 is actually already approved. A difference of opinion on that one. Can we clarify that, please?
Yeah, I mean, the chain of events were hinted at or spelt out in the that a license was transferred from another hotel.
Yep.
And so that's been the foundation.
Yep.
There was an approval subject to conditions. So the applicant already has an active approval, and they could activate that space.
Mm.
They just need to do it within the constraints of the surrounding approval, which is the constraints over the public access easement and constraints over the maximum floor space. So
that approval remains current?
Yes.
Okay, it does. Thank you.
Encourage them to exercise it.
Thank you.
Subject to the sound and acoustic condition.
Thank you. Any other questions from the panellists? No questions? Okay. So for the panel, we have a situation where the applicant, it's obviously protracted. There's been a lot of issues that have been, you know, risen and addressed or not addressed, and it's been to court and come back from court. We can either agree to a deferral, which is what the applicant is requesting. We can support Council's recommendation for refusal. I don't think we're in a position to approve because the applicant agrees that it's not yet at a stage for approval. Can I get a view from the panellists where you think this should be placed? My sense of it is that we have issues around acoustics, we have issues around the privatisation of public space, we have issues around the numbers of patrons and the artworks. And my feeling as chair would be that a deferral is actually probably not constructive. I think that those issues need to be substantively resolved, and I think it may be better to refuse. But can I get the view of the panellists, please? Can I start with you, please, Sean?
Look, my view is similar to yours. And Steve, Nickel said we can arrive at a great balance between public and private, and I think we can do that, but I think that process has to happen working with council within the constraints of the original consent. So I think that would be, given the longevity of this application, be better to refuse this one today and start that process of dialogue.
I just want to note, which I didn't say previously, that this is also an unusual situation in that there is the covenant. And I think it's the only space, public space, publicly accessible, privately owned space that has a covenant on it. One of the few. Okay, thank you. Thanks very much. Ms. Lockhead, Helen.
Yes, I would agree with that and support that action because I think that actually he needs to start afresh and deal with the constraints that the council has outlined.
Thank you. Amelia, thank you.
Yeah, I would also agree and really just emphasise the value of the public space to the Sydney community and that in reworking the design that really try to preserve as much public space as possible.
Thank you. Just adding to that as well, I think amongst the panellists, while nobody's mentioned it right now, we do have a really, really strong support for activation of the edges of public space. But there's equally a need to balance that with access to the public space and retention of the public open space, and in the situation there is the covenant. We do then have a panel which is unanimous in its support for refusal, which means we're unanimous in our support for council's position. For the reason that we've just articulated, which is that we believe the matter has been protracted, that it, we would encourage further work with council if the applicant wishes to return. The panel certainly supports the protection of what was secured as publicly accessible space over which there is a covenant, and at the same time does support activation of the public space, but that has to be within reason. Thank you. Anything else anybody wishes to add? No. And the acoustic issues also require, you know, reasonable resolution to the satisfaction of council. Thank you very much. That matter is then refused. We are moving on to item 4, which is the development application for 658 to 660 Botany Road, Alexandria, which is D/2018/871. I'm just going to wait for those leaving the room to leave. Thank you very much, everybody, particularly the speakers. Okay, we are moving on to item 4, development application 658 to 660 Botany Road, Alexandria, D/2018/871. Mr. Mackay, if you could take us through the presentation, please.
Thank you. So this is an application for a six-storey shop-top housing development. The application includes demolition and excavation of two basement levels. There'll be ground floor retail and business premises. 30 residential apartments, 25 car parking spaces. The application is an integrated development application. It requires the approval of Water New South Wales. The application is recommended for deferred commencement approval. The application was notified in August and September of last year. 285 owners and occupiers were notified and 12 submissions were received. The submissions related to a number of issues, including overshadowing, privacy impacts, excessive height and loss of sky views, the wind effects of the development, demolition and construction noise, demands on local infrastructure, on-street parking demand, items being dropped from balconies, and stormwater management issues. The submissions came from premises either side of the development site. So this is the site. It has frontage to Botany Road and Birmingham Street. This is a view of the site from Botany Road. It's currently a vacant site used for car parking. This is a shop-top housing development adjacent to the northeast at 654 to 656 Botany Road. And this is a streetscape view looking northeast along Botany Road. This is a shop-top housing development adjacent to the southwest, 662 to 674 Botany Road. And this is a view looking southwest along Botany Road. This is the heritage-listed Gardeners Road School on the opposite side of Botany Road. And this is the Birmingham Street frontage of the subject site, a residential development either side. This is the adjacent building to the northeast and the adjacent building to the southwest. There's a view along the pedestrian link through the property to the southwest at 662 to 674 Botany Road. And this is a view to the northeast towards the site from that through site link, 662 through to 674 Botany Road. There's a view of the Birmingham Street frontage of the heritage item, former warehouse, and the adjacent site, obscured by vehicles and trees for the most part, that view. And this is the development a little adjacent to that development, a little further to the south, the heritage-listed former warehouse building, residential apartment building behind. This is the existing warehouse, is at 10 to 14 Birmingham Street, opposite the site. And the next set of slides are the plans and elevations for the development, so proposed basement level 2. Basement level 1, vehicle access to the basement is from Birmingham Street, and that's along the southern boundary of the site. This is the ground level of the proposal, so the development is split into two built forms, one on Botany Road and one on Birmingham Street, with an internal courtyard between. The level 2 floor plan, level 3, level 4, level 5, and then level 6. The Botany Road building is higher than the Birmingham Street building. And then the roof plan of the development. This is the Botany Road elevation and the Birmingham Street elevation. The northeast elevation of the development and the southwest elevation of the development. So I suppose that's the elevation adjacent to that open space on the development to the south. So you can see the buildings are essentially aligned with the adjacent building. And this is the northwest internal elevation and the southeast internal elevation. A section through the development. It's another section. This is through the driveway into the basement, so along the southern boundary of the site, essentially. And this is the Botany Road building and the Birmingham Street building. So in terms of the controls and the LEP, the form of development under the LEP is required to be shop-top housing, so there needs to be a commercial retail presence on the ground floor, which there is, so it complies with that control. It complies with a maximum 22-metre height control, complies with a maximum 2-to-1 floor space ratio control, and complies with the maximum car parking. In terms of SEP 65 and the ADG, it essentially complies with the provisions of those controls in terms of separation, provision of common open space, solar access. There is an issue in relation to cross-ventilation, and that's because Botany Road and Birmingham Street are identified as noisy roads, so there's an issue in terms of dealing with noise and cross-ventilation, and that's addressed through the detailed design of the proposal and the inclusion of acoustic vents and plenums to provide adequate ventilation whilst the windows are closed. There is a... it complies in terms of the ADG with deep soil planting. That's at 9.5% of site area. That's a slight non-compliance with the council controls for deep soil planting. It complies with floor to ceiling heights, minimum apartment size, and private open space. And it complies with in terms of the Sydney DCP, complies with the active frontages, footpath awning, height and stories controls, and the public domain setback requirements. With a 1.4-metre setback to Botany Road as a land dedication subject to a planning agreement. It also complies with the common open space requirements. I mentioned a moment ago there's a slight non-compliance with the deep soil planting provisions, but it does comply with the ADG deep soil planting controls, and it complies with the dwelling mix controls. So the issues essentially related to the addressing that problem of noise from the roads and providing adequate and natural ventilation. There's a voluntary planning agreement proposed in relation to the 1.4-metre setback from Botany Road. There are some design refinements proposed to be addressed by way of conditions of consent and the hours of operation of the commercial tenancies, which were also addressed by the conditions of consent. So this slide just shows the design detail of the acoustic vents and plenums that have been incorporated in the design of the development to address the issue of noise and ventilation. And this plan shows the bedrooms facing Birmingham Street and how that issue is proposed to be addressed. This plan shows the 1.4 metre setback to Botany Road, subject to the planning agreement. That has been publicly exhibited for 28 days from the 15th of October. So that's still in progress, hence the reason for the deferred commencement consent. There are a number of conditions proposed to address some design refinements in relation to materials, issues of overlooking, sun shading, and safety and access issues. In terms of the hours of operation of the premises, the application didn't propose any hours. Conditions are recommended to regulate both the indoor and outdoor operation for those commercial premises. The internal courtyard is associated with commercial use on Botany Road. So the indoor hours are recommended at 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sunday and public holidays. Outdoor operations are recommended 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday to Sunday. So the application is recommended for a deferred commencement approval, subject to the planning agreement being executed and registered on title, and that the detailed design of the natural ventilation be submitted and approved by council.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mackay. We have two speakers registered. Angela Amar is our first speaker. Angela, thank you. If you'd approach the microphone, please switch it on, and then you have 3 minutes. Thanks, Angela.
Thank you. My name's Angela Amar, and I live in the what we call the Europa Apartments, which is the adjacent building on 662-674 Botany Road, which is also on 15 to 24 Birmingham Street. I've lived in this building for 15 years and in the area for a good 46 years, so I'm well across, I guess, the changes to the area. The key things that I wanted to address have already been addressed, but I just wanted to reiterate. Actually, there's one item that hasn't been addressed, which I really wanted to emphasise as well. The first concern with a lot of people in our building, there are actually four blocks within this area. The key one being the overshadowing and the height of the six-storey building. Now, I don't know if you've seen, you've all seen the diagrams, but I should probably point out that our building is a good 14 to 15 metres in height. It may not always be, you may not be able to view it in some of those diagrams versus the 22 metres in the proposed development. And with the design of our building, you'll notice that the balconies have a step design, so that wall overshadows many of the balconies that are on the third and fourth level. So I just want to point that out because it may not be entirely obvious when you're looking at some of the diagrams. Now, the next one is a big one, I think, that's coming up with a lot of the developments, and that's the construction of basement levels and impact on neighbouring buildings. And we all know the Mascot Towers scenario. So speaking to our building manager, he has emphasised that he is working on several buildings in Mascot which have definitely been impacted by the construction of neighbouring developments. Our building does not actually have a basement car park. It is on ground level, so when we enter our car park, it's only a slight decline. So the neighbouring development will be going two basement levels below us, so we've got definite concerns with ground movement and subsequent, movement to our building. And, should this development be proceed, one, we prefer that there is a review of the basement level construction and whether they are allowed to go down below our basement. If that obviously is not does not go through, at least for council to stipulate a process for how the shoring process is managed within that building, and that our owners' corporation are actively involved and have an opportunity to do our own dilapidation reports to be able to monitor post-development and building structure. And the final issue, obviously the density of the building now, many of you are aware that there was rezoning done in 2012 where buildings went from four storeys to six storeys. And, you know, buying into the building, we did buy into that city of villages that the council was so actively proposing and trying to merge the commercial with the residential. Moving now to the six storeys, what we're seeing is there's definitely a lot of impact on transport and roads. You only have to visit the area around to see that and being able to get onto public transport. So I know you've noted it, but just it's something that is very evident to someone who's been right in the area. Thank you.
Thanks, Angela. Thank you. Tone Wheeler, on behalf of the applicant.
Good evening, panel.
Thanks, Tone. You've got 3 minutes.
Council staff.
Thank you.
I'm Tone Wheeler. I'm the architect and the applicant for this project. It has a fairly long and unfortunate history. It's 15 months before council, being lodged in July last year. The building is substantially emasculated from what it originally was and intended by my clients, who are a trade delegation with the backing of the Indonesian government wanting to open a trade premises primarily for display of goods and interchange of trade between Australia and Indonesia. They wanted a large trade hall and they wanted some live-work spaces above that with some apartments which they could use to accommodate visiting people from Indonesia. And they were intending to fund the project by having a secondary building on Birmingham Street, which would be commercially designed apartments and a commercial space, which they would sell off. The spaces for the trade delegation we proposed were much larger, much more substantial than the usual 7-Eleven that you might find in the bottom of one of these buildings. And the live-work is not commonly found, and that's been taken out as a result of a refusal to accept an increased FSR for that area. The building was also intended to reflect some of the Indonesian influence on Australian design and Indonesian design by having a very strong landscape component to it, drawing on the ideas of Made Wijaya, my late friend from Bali, in the landscape that it was, and it would have an internal garden dedicated to Made Wijaya, which has also been removed or downsized as a result of council's requirements. So the building is actually just a lesser version of the original. My clients are desperate to get a DA. 15 months is a long period of time for the building to go through. The report recommends an approval for it, and we're grateful for that, and we agree. There's one issue I'd like to take issue with, and that's the deferred commencement condition on acoustic control for natural ventilation. As I said, the project was lodged before council 15 months ago. It had a number of RFIs which came late, beyond the 42 days that we could have gone to Land and Environment Court, but we told our clients that it would be best to negotiate with council. We have a long tradition of this. It's the ninth building we've done on Botany Road. We felt we were in a good place to negotiate. Unfortunately, those negotiations required fairly severe changes, and we made those changes in good faith and finished making those in February of this year. There was then a change in...
Can you move to wrap up, please?
I think it's very important. This 15 right. months, I mean more than 3 minutes.
I'm sorry, but everybody gets 3 minutes and you need to wrap up.
The condition of consent relating to acoustic control came in after this was lodged, after it should have been approved, came in during a time when the planner, we'll call her Plan M, did not respond to numerous requests, and 4 months went past without council saying anything to us, and then used a draft document that we believe is highly flawed in order to impose conditions on us.
Okay,
for acoustics.
Mr. Wheeler, thank you very much.
I would like that condition removed.
Thank you. We note that request. Those are both the speakers. Those are all the speakers we have for this development application. Any questions from panellists?
I have a question. Tone, could I ask you just to pop back and could you explain the landscape idea to us? And I'll tell you why I'm asking the question. I guess I'm a little concerned on the Botany Road side with the deep, there's a planter box above the awnings about 5 metres and looks about 2.5 to 3 metres level two under the other level. So if you can explain the vision of the landscape for effectively that whole facade.
The idea is to create an awning with landscape on it, not a steel awning but a concrete awning which cantilevers beyond it. There's a series of columns in the front of it that hold up that cantilever. It's not unheard of for concrete to span that distance. It's got soil, organic, inorganic soil for things to grow that would allow it to have traipsing plants. The difference between planting in Australia, which gradually grows upwards, and that which grows in Asia is that it tends to grow over and down. And so we were trying to introduce planting that would spill over the edge and down and create a fringe on the edge of it. And then that would carry up that facade with two very large elements that struck a counterpoint to that, being tiled in the Indonesian flag colours. But be that as it may, they just highlight flashes on it. So they were offsetting the white and red to the greenery that would actually be spilling down. Inside it was a courtyard, and that courtyard would work from the trade delegation, and the communal open space for the residents would be on the roof of the building on Birmingham Street, which is substantially smaller and narrower and set back as a result of the solar studies that we did to convince council and inter alia, hopefully the neighbours next door, that we're not overshadowing them any more than any other building on that street does.
Thank you. Any
just
questions?
One other thing. I guess the concern was around the depth of that. I mean, I think if with the conditions that we see through the consent, if they're adhered to and the spirit of the design of the landscape on that facade is landed, this could be a really great thing for this building. I've just seen plenty of deep planter boxes that sort of, they become ashtrays or width.
The width of it is intended as to have sufficient area in order to be able to grow substantial planting. And the plant design's done by Dave Duncan from Sydney Design Collective, very well known, probably the best known green wall, green roof specialist. We engaged him deliberately for that. He's my main landscape contractor, main designer rather. So I'm quite confident that would work. There are hole points and all sorts of requirements for safety aspects built into it as well. And they're all documented. There's a maintenance schedule in the landscape planning.
Thank you. Further questions, Mr. Carter? No. Any other questions, Ms. Lockhead, Helen?
Just with regards to the concerns of the neighbour about the construction process and the protection of their property and the conditions that would be there in the DA consent to protect their interests. Can you just clarify the app?
Yeah. Through your chair.
Yep.
So there are standard conditions that the City of Sydney imposes, I think, in regard to a strict requirement on the proponent to undertake dilapidation reports prior to construction. There is no impediment for the owner of any adjoining building to undertake their own dilapidation reports if they so wish. And I appreciate the concern expressed, although there is quite substantial evidence of basements being constructed and that do structurally perform without causing any damage or impact on a neighbouring property, although, as has been shown, Recently, there has been some evidence, particularly in the Ascot example, where there's a rail line and its construction or co-located core soil conditions where there has been for quite some years. So it's right to express that concern. There is protection. We understand the issue, but it's a 1.5-storey basement. It's not an excessive basement, considering other applications. Protections are built in.
Thank you.
I would just suggest that with a landscape, perhaps for your consideration, that it might be good to just amend condition 55, considering I was here to listen to this, from the council's area planning manager to council's director of city planning. And in the second line, a detailed green roof, and just add the words, and level two, design including plans and details, just for absolute clarity, that what we've heard from the proponent is consistent with the descriptions that have been given in the past. We'd like to see that successfully carried through.
Thank you. Thank you for that suggestion. Amelia, Ms. Thorpe, any comments? Are you finished, by the way? And then, sorry. your microphone's not on. Can you switch your microphone? Other one. Sorry. Yeah.
The director of planning to respond to the acoustic control condition that the applicant commented on.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Yarn.
The project would have gone much swifter had it have complied with our maximum floor space control. However, it does now. And Bodney Road will continue to become a major connection between the ports and the city. And it does carry heavy loads and dangerous goods. And we expect the noise to be a factor. So what is included as a requirement is just to adjust the design via the ventilation requirements to modify the intrusion of sound during the quiet hours to produce appropriate minutes. So yes, they may have come later in the process, but nevertheless, these considerations are consistently applied to residential developments going forward on Bonnie Road.
Okay, thank you. Anything further? No. Sorry, back to you, Ms. Thorpe. Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Yarn again, may I please check the issue raised regarding overshadowing and height and the overshadowing of balconies? I know it's often difficult to understand those overshadowing diagrams. Can you just clarify for us the position from Council's point of view in terms of overshadowing?
Yeah, Council's position, the staff's assessment, is that the is a satisfactory outcome, and that the still got a 2-to-1 floor space ratio, the density of development. The increase in height that was made 7 or 8 years ago, when that work was only 2012. Was to give more capacity to produce better outcomes, which you see in this proposal. So it's still only got an intensification of 2-to-1.
Yep. And presumably the overshadowing has been assessed in terms of the design guidelines, and it meets the design guidelines.
It does. And staff is satisfied that it produces reasonable neighbourly outcome.
Yep.
And we thank the neighbour for their submission.
Thank you. Ms. Emma, just to confirm, those diagrams are often really, really confusing and really hard to read, and they often give like the worst case impression. But what Mr. Jan is saying is that it's met the design guidelines, which does mean it complies. So, Ms. Emma, we're not going to enter into debate, but just to reassure you, it's been properly assessed from all sides. We recognize that those diagrams can be hard to read, and they do often show like the worst case scenario, but it's meeting the design guidelines and the precedents and requirements for the area. I'm noting also what Mr. Jan has said. We fully appreciate your concern regarding the basements, but the conditions that have been put in place and the building controls that are in place are designed and there to protect your building. If you do want to take your own, photographs beforehand, it's something that you're obviously welcome to do. Okay, thank you. Can I get views from the panel, please, on the recommendation from council, which is for approval subject to conditions. One of those conditions, condition 55, there's been minor suggestions for amendment made by Mr. Jan in relation to the landscaping. Okay, can I start with you, please?
Yes, I support the recommendation of council officer with the amendment proposed by the director of planning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Same? Thank you. Okay. I too support that. I'm happy with that amendment to condition 55. With respect to the concerns raised by the neighbours, this matter is then approved, subject to the amendment to condition 55. And Mr. Wheeler, thank you for raising the issue in relation to the natural ventilation acoustic controls. This is a standard control that will be applied going forward, but we obviously recognize your concerns about the lateness of the notification. Thank you very much. We are moving then to item 5, which we will deal with together with item 6, as the two buildings are effectively mirrors of each other. Mr. Mackay, could we move to the presentation of this, noting that we have had a written objection, but that person is unable to speak to that.
Thank you. So this is an application for alterations and additions to an existing boarding house at number 82. The next item on the agenda relates to alterations and additions to a boarding house at number 84. The proposals are essentially mirror images of each other. The application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. Just by way of background, the site has been used as a boarding house since 1982. In 2018, there was an application submitted for alterations and additions to the boarding house. That was refused by the local planning panel. It was actually refused in January of this year. The proposal has been significantly amended in the following ways. The first floor extension has been removed. The elevated walkways have been deleted. There's improved amenity for the future occupants in terms of room sizes and communal spaces. And additional information that was lacking on the previous application has been provided. So the application was notified in August of this year. 26 owners and occupiers were notified. 5 submissions were received. The submissions related to the use and built form of the rear lane building that is proposed, management of the site, heritage impacts, and loss of privacy. The submissions came from residential premises in close proximity to the premises and primarily on the opposite side of the laneway. So this is the site. This is a site viewed from City Road. So close-up elevation and the adjoining site, number 84. It's a similar view of the site from the rear, from Maze Lane, and the rear elevation of the building. The existing building's in a fairly poor state of repair. This is a view looking east from the attic of the building at number 82. And this is looking east from the rear of the site on Maze Lane. So you can see there are existing structures on Maze Lane of a similar scale to that proposed. This is a view looking south along Maze Lane and looking north. So the next set of slides are the plans and elevations of the building, so the proposed ground floor plan. So the works throughout the building, but at the ground floor, essentially a new ground floor addition and a building to the rear on Maze Lane. Proposed first floor and the proposed second floor, which is the attic of the existing building, and the proposed roof plan. So this is a section through the development, so you can see on the left-hand side of the image the new structures proposed, an addition, single-storey addition, the rear of the premises, and then a building to the laneway. This is the proposed front City Road elevation on the left, and the rear elevation to Maze Lane on the right, and the proposed north elevation. This is a view of the built form of the building as it would present to Maze Lane. In terms of compliance with the relevant controls, there is a non-compliance with affordable housing SEP. The SEP requires the provision of a communal living room. A communal living room is proposed in the new building, although it's 3 square metres short of the 20 square metres that would be required. In terms of minimum room size, the control is 12 square metres. 5 rooms are less than the 12 square metres, the smallest being 9 square metres, but those rooms are existing rooms within the existing boarding house. In terms of lodgers per room, the proposed development is proposing to comply with that control, and that's 1 lodger per room for rooms that are below 16 square metres and 2 per room, up to 2 per room for rooms over 16 square metres. There is a non-compliance with the open space provision. The controls would seek 20 square metres of open space other than the front setback area. There is no communal, effectively no usable communal open space proposed. There is a front setback area, and there is some space to the rear side of the built form, but there's no outdoor communal garden space. In terms of compliance with the bicycle spaces, it complies. There's a non-compliance with the motorcycle spaces. That's a development standard subject to a clause 4.6 variation request, which is supported. In terms of the key LEP development standards, there is a non-compliance with the 9-metre height limit. The existing building already exceeds the 9-metre height limit. The works within the roof form, the conversion of the attic space, have a maximum height of 10.14 metres, and that's just due to the proposed rear dormer window. Clause 4.6 variation request in relation to that non-compliance, which is supported. The development complies with the maximum permissible floor space ratio. In terms of the DCP controls, a height and storey control of 2 storeys, it complies. Minimum room size of 12 square metres. Some of the rooms are below that, the existing rooms. There's a non-compliance. There's a non-compliance with the indoor communal area, in that they provide an indoor communal area, but it's 3 square metres short of the 20 square metre requirement, and there's a non-compliance with the open space. The issues are essentially the clause 4.6 variation request for non-compliance with height, motorcycle parking, and the amenity of future occupants. In terms of the height non-compliance, the height exceedance is limited to the rear dormer. The new works are below the maximum height of the existing building, and there's no significant impacts arising from the non-compliance. In terms of motorcycle parking, the controls would require 2 spaces. No spaces are provided. A lack of parking provided will facilitate the provision of the communal open space. The only place to get the motorcycle parking would be off the laneway. It's the ground level of the new laneway building that provides the communal space that the existing boarding house doesn't have. So when weighed up against that, and having regard to the fact that the site is well serviced by public transport, And there's no significant impacts arising from not having motorcycle parking, though 4.6 is supported. In terms of amenity, it's considered there's an overall improvement in the amenity for the future residents over the existing boarding house on the site. Average room sizes are to be increased, although some of them still don't comply with the minimums. All rooms now have access to adequate light and ventilation, or will have access to adequate light and ventilation, and there'll be an improved communal living areas provided. In terms of the submissions, the Real Aim building complies with the provisions of the DCP and will only be used as secondary access for occupants of the development. The management of the site is subject of a plan of management. The heritage impacts are considered to be relatively minor, and the overall development in keeping with the character of the conservation area. And there'll be no additional overlooking resulting from the proposal. So the application is recommended for approval.
Thank you, Mr. Mackay. We have two speakers registered. Lee Cosnetta. Lee, you're speaking on behalf of the applicant, and if you could cover, we're covering items 5 and 6, so the mirror application at the same time.
Thank you. And I have here tonight the owners of the boarding house who are registered to speak after me, but it may not be necessary that they speak if you have any questions. We welcome and endorse the recommendations in the report. Contrary to some of the other dialogue tonight, we're actually quite grateful for the ongoing professionalism and very constructive dialogue that we had with Jemima Royal throughout this process, which is very helpful to get this application moving forward from a previous refusal. This application follows that refusal, and we worked very hard to resolve all of the issues of council, reduced the scale of the building, and provided additional consultant reports as requested. This is now an application to simply improve the existing boarding house, which is quite tired and dilapidated, and maintains 10 boarding rooms, but with greater amenity for all of the occupants. Whilst there were objections to this application, I feel the amendments that we made since January, worked through with council, have resolved those issues, and I note the council officers agree with that as well. We endorse the recommended conditions of consent with the exception of condition number 14. Condition 14 relates to a requirement for the finished floor-to-ceiling height to be a minimum of 2.7 metres. My inclination is that that's a condition that would relate to a residential flat building under SEP 65, and we would ordinarily provide that ceiling height. However, in the attic and within the laneway structure, we're unable to provide that figure, and so we would seek deletion of that condition of consent. In all other respects, the conditions are agreed. Thank you. Available for questions.
Thank you very much. So, considering that the next speaker may not speak, are there any questions from panellists? Yes, please go ahead, Ms. Thorpe.
So, I had a question about the kind of affordable housing that's being provided. So, you're still maintaining 10 rooms, but they're being quite significantly upgraded. This might be a question for the owner, but maybe you can answer. I'm curious about what the tenant profile is now, and what the rent is now, and what you're expecting that will be. Are you expecting, is it students that live there now? Is it still going to be students? Who's going to live there? And how much more will the rooms cost?
Yeah, I certainly think it's worth deferring to the owners for that. I'm not quite sure. You want to come up, Sam?
Thanks. Hi, my name is Zen Kudanaris. I'm one of the owners, along with my brother.
Thank you, Zen.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow the question, but it was relating to these.
It's relating to the affordability and what the rents will be going forward as opposed to what the rents are now.
And also, as well as the rents, who lives there? I'm curious, it's obviously quite dilapidated, so it's probably one of the few very affordable houses in the area. And what will it be like after this?
Thank you.
It's quite mixed at the moment. It's predominantly, frankly, I'd say 75% older men and alcoholics, effectively. No money's been spent on these places for a long time, decades, if I had to guess. our goal is not to charge exorbent rents. At the moment, the rents They're a bit low. We were about to increase them, but there was no point given that we have a DA, but they're probably around $200 a week. I agree, it's very cheap for so close to the city. But we still plan to keep them below the threshold set by OSR, or Revenue in New South Wales, I think, which is what we do in the other boarding houses that we have. We have two other boarding houses in the area, just across our family, and both of them are below the threshold. So we just find it's easier to keep them cheap and not out to rent it to backpackers. They're generally long-term tenants, other buildings. The profile is not backpackers. I wouldn't say it was students. It's really just people who work, not a party place. We manage it ourselves, so we're not interested in fielding calls all hours of the morning for noise. I myself actually lived in a boarding house for 10 years, 20, so I know them quite well. My brother did for a shorter time, so we know the business. We also are not interested in being a place that it's hard to manage, to be honest. So the rents will be probably, like if it was finished today and we were renting today, they'd probably be around the 250 mark. Be a bit more for the large, would be more for the larger room and maybe less for the smaller room. That's consistent with what we're doing right now in Redfern.
Thank you. Thank you. Bob, does that answer your question? Thank you. Mr. Carter.
With this new proposal, if it was to be approved, do you think it would change the profile of the people? And what change would that be?
Oh, sorry.
They probably will be a bit younger just because of the nature of the place. The students, depends on what you define as a student, because there's normal uni students, as you'd expect, around the area, but the people who identify as students we find are working full-time and doing some English course. But not really. I'd say predominantly, just thinking about the tenants we have now, they're predominantly workers. I go through a quick profile of who's living now in Charmer Street. We've got operations manager of the Tesla place in Alexandria. We've got cleaners. We've got physio. There's a guy who works in a restaurant. I'd say more than half of them identify maybe as students, but they're just young people. Well, the average age is probably 30. Range would be probably from late 20s to late 30s. And I mean, we know we're doing a good job because they just stay until they need.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, thank you. And just noting those questions don't actually go to your planning approval. It's just more the interest of the panel in relation to affordable housing.
Yeah, I could talk for hours on
this. No, that's okay. Yeah. That's why we're going to stop right now. Thank you very much. Any other questions in relation to the approval or issues? May I just please check that issue of the condition 14 in relation to the height, the floor to ceiling height, which is not achieved in one of the rooms. Thank you, Mr. Young.
Yeah,
in
so
two rooms.
What I suggest is that an additional sentence be added to that condition.
Yeah.
And that sentence might read that this condition does not apply to the first floor room in the new building facing Mays Lane or the second floor attic space of the existing building.
Thank you. I believe that addresses the issue, Mr. Cosnetta, that addresses the issue and the concerns.
Yes, it does.
Thank you. Okay, panellists, taking into account those amendments to Condition 14, can I get an indication of whether or not you are happy to support Council's approval? Happy to Council. I'm also happy to support it, noting that amendment to Condition 14. The matter is then approved subject to the conditions. Thank you. Okay, that closes off development applications 5 and 6. Have we done that procedurally appropriately for two different applications? The same condition, I assume, applies to the other one. Yes. Okay, good. All good. Thank you very much. We are moving then to development application number 7. Ms. Mackay, before you present, The panel has been briefed on this application. We have reviewed the papers. There are no speakers registered to speak. I am happy to support Council's recommendation. Can I get the indication of the panel, please? Happy to support. Okay, the matter is then approved, subject to conditions as per Council's recommendation. Thank you. This does close the panel at 6:31 p.m. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.